I'm going to share on the topic for about 5 minutes, if I last that long. And then you'll have three panelists to share each. My name is Cecilia. I'm a compulsive overeater. So happy to be here. And yes, I am at my goal weight again. And yes, my sponsor asked me to do this, so yes, I said yes. And I'm grateful, Dan. Thank you. I have 8 months again. I started in OA in 1967 or 68. It must have been fairly new because I guess it started in 1960 and they did have gray sheet. And I thought I was better. I thought once I lost my weight that I was better and didn't have to go. But anyway, so I've been in and out all these years. How many years is that? A lot. But I keep coming back, and I've had lots of abstinence over the years. And how not to eat, how to put the fork down is just to trust in God, all the things that you know, all the tools. Call my sponsor, go to my meetings, share at meetings, listen at meetings so I'm reminded of what it was like, because what I do is I've already sort of forgotten what hell I was in when I walked in here this last time. I was out for 2 years and it was just awful. And it's so hard to get back. So I'm so grateful for this time that I have. I like my abstinence. I love being abstinent. I love eating when I'm abstinent. I hate eating when I'm not abstinent. It's like hell when I just shovel it in and I'm miserable. And when I'm abstinent, I love my meals. I eat 3 meals a day. I eat them at the dining room table. I don't eat in the car anywhere else. I don't eat in between. I'm grateful that we have this solution, that we have each other. And my home group has about 10 members. And a lot of them are struggling, but we show up for meetings. We have 2 meetings a week up in Northern California. And I'm planning to take, I'm taking each one of them one of those buttons. Each one is different, so I hope they don't fight over them. I probably should take each one, each person, all of them. And so they're counting on me to bring lots of hope and strength to them from this birthday party. So I'm grateful that I've been here. I will get all these CDs from all the different speakers, and we will listen to them. So I know some of the other things that I have to remember is that overeating leads to overeating. It's not just the binge foods. It's not just the trigger foods. It's actually the practice of eating too much leads to more eating too much, and I don't want to be triggered, so I'm very careful right now. So I think that's all. Is that okay? Okay. Thank you. So our first speaker is Angela. She's going to speak for 15 minutes, and it says here to please ask Angela to qualify her abstinence and her weight loss.
Hi, everyone. My name is Angela, and I'm a real compulsive overeater.
Hi, Angela.
Hi, everyone. First of all, I really want to thank Dan for asking me to speak. It is really an honor and a privilege to be here. And I just love compulsive overeaters. I think we're the smartest, most diligent, and hardworking people on the planet. I really mean that. I think we're amazing. And I really love compulsive overeaters. That said, I wasn't just trying to butter you up, but I was at my meeting this morning and I'm like asking in my share, I'm going to speak at the OA convention this afternoon and nobody's going to like what I have to say. So I just want you guys to know I'm just going to speak from my heart and I do care about you. And that anything I say is just my story. It's not OA, it's not anything. It's my story with the food. To just tell you a little bit about what it was like, I think I'm a down and dirty compulsive overeater. I ate out of trash bins. I had my worst eating when I was still living in Canada. And just one example that pops to mind is I remember walking home at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I had spent all my tip money on food on Yonge Street, which is kind of back-to-back restaurants. And there was a frozen, are we allowed to mention food in this meeting? There was a frozen pizza on the top of a mailbox, because, you know, it's Canada, so anything that's left out gets frozen. And I don't know who left it there, and I don't know what condition they were in, but I picked it up, and I started eating it. Frozen and all, didn't matter, because I had to eat. I had to eat. I ate my way through 3 colleges, 3 different programs, because I always thought it was something out there that was the problem. It was the major. It was the wrong major. It was the wrong dormitory. It was the wrong roommates. It was the wrong college. You know what? It was the wrong country. So I traveled around the world, and I ate in some of the most beautiful places in the world. I binged myself to death looking at the Eiffel Tower one day, and I walked up the Arc de Triomphe and binged up there, too. And then I spent some time in Spain, and I binged over there. And then I went to Africa, and lo and behold, the god of anorexia showed up. I had been wanting that god to return. I had been anorexic in my teens when I was a ballerina, and I wanted that back, and here it was. So in Africa, I was able to go for 3 months on about 5 bites a day. That was my diet, 5 bites a day for breakfast, and then nothing until the next day. And I would, you could go topless there, and this is to get everybody else who's not in the room in the room. So I'd climb up to the top of the water tower, take off my shirt, and like brown myself. And when what I wanted to do is I wanted to come back to North America brown and skinny. And that's what I did. I came back brown and skinny. That was my goal. So when my mom picked me up at the airport, she took me to this place called Mr. Green Jeans, which was a restaurant famous for its oversized portions. Actually had a job there at one point. And I ordered a quiche Lorraine and a spinach salad with blue cheese dressing, and that was the end. It started another binge that lasted over a decade. So I was in pretty bad shape. I ended up in 2 treatment centers. I tried Prozac. That didn't work for me. I was moved to L.A. because I knew that if I became rich and famous, that would fix the problem. You know, all I had to do was be happy, and then the food thing would go away. So I came to L.A. With no money and no green card and expected to find my way into the business of fame and fortune. What happened was, through a series of different circumstances, I ended up living in a 1966 Volkswagen pop-top camper that somebody had given me in an acting class because he didn't have anywhere to park it. We're all in L.A., we know that problem. So I lived in my camper for 7 months, binged my brains out. I knew where all the happy hours were on Hollywood Boulevard, and I was at them. And then I ended up, when my van died, the engine seized, I ended up at the West Hollywood Homeless Organization, and I lived there for 7 months. So if anybody thinks, and if, you know, when I was in the homeless organization, people in there were coming off of crystal meth. And I was coming off of food. And I wasn't even coming off of it, because unfortunately at the West Hollywood Homeless Organization, there was a lot of donations given daily to that place, and most of them were carbohydrates. So I was in the walk-in refrigerator having a good old time. And so that's my story. So if any of you think I don't belong here, you can just leave the room. So I'm going to go now with the, just with all that said, I am abstinent on July 17th. It'll be 17 years of back-to-back abstinence. Where are those 3 questions? I really want to stick to the format here. I don't want to cause any problems. Right here. Okay. So how much time do I have left, Dan? 8 more minutes. Okay, so 8 minutes. So I'm going to spend 2.5 minutes on each question. Okay, so the question is, am I at my goal weight? My sponsor said to me my first day of abstinence, she said, I want you to weigh yourself tomorrow morning with no clothes on before breakfast, and you tell me what your weight is, and then you tell me your goal weight. I told her my weight, I told her my goal weight, and she says, great, God will decide. I don't really believe I get to choose my goal weight. I believe that I have, like, there's a certain number of tickets we get when we're born, like to get to choose what our weight is, to get to choose that we get to eat whatever we want. I've pretty much blown through all those tickets. I will say that I am at exactly the same weight for the last 16 years, ever since I came to be abstinent and got abstinent. When I first came, I was about 20 pounds overweight. But you know what, guys? It didn't matter. Because right now I weigh a certain amount, and I'm not going to say the number because I don't want people to start comparing. But there was a time when I weighed 20 pounds less than I do now, and I was crazy. I was miserable. I weighed 92 pounds, and it wasn't skinny enough for me. So really, to honestly answer this question, my goal weight used to be my birth weight. Today, my goal weight is exactly the weight I am. I am happy in my skin today. I thank God for my body, that I'm healthy after all the abuse I gave it, that I'm not walking around with crutches or walking around with a kidney missing or all my teeth missing. So I am grateful today. Thank you. Okay, that was 1 minute and 59 seconds, so we're doing good here. All right, has God lifted the obsession to overeat, or am I still huffing and puffing to abstain from my eating disease? This reminds me of the quote that was read at the beginning of this workshop, which is my most favorite quote in the entire big book. And I didn't get abstinent right away. I came to OA and I suffered and I struggled for a really long time. And I remember sitting in meetings and I would punch my fist down on that book, on that page, and I would say, I want that. I want to recoil from food as if it were a hot flame. Well, today I can tell you all that I have that. I have kids. Several years ago, when my stepkids were a lot younger than they are now, we'd be like driving and there'd be like my soda, my diet soda in this hand and then their soda in this hand, and they'd be like fighting in the back, so I'd be holding the sodas and then I'd accidentally take a sip, and as soon as that liquid hit my mouth, I spit it out, like recoiling from it as if it were a hot flame. Today I have a 5- and a 6-year-old. I make them peanut butter sandwich. I used to binge on that stuff, you guys. That was my biggest binge food. I stole hundreds of jars of that from roommates. And today I make it. I'm in it. Thank you. 5 more minutes. Good. So I make it. I'm in it. It does not call to me. It's not mine. It's not my abstinent food. And that is a miracle from God. I do not obsess about food today. And back to the weight loss thing. I lost about 20 pounds, which is not a lot, on my body. But I actually lost 1,000 pounds right here in between my ears of negative thinking, obsessing, what did I eat? Did I eat too much? Didn't I eat too much? All that mental gymnastics that goes on disappeared my very first abstinent meal. And that is a miracle of God. So great. So is the obsession lifted? You better believe it. Thank you, God. What would I change about my abstinence today? You know, in this room, they say progress, not perfection. I have perfect abstinence. Perfectionist that I am, My abstinence is perfect. I eat the biggest and the best. I do not deprive myself. I get to go to the market, and my abstinence with my sponsor is I get one fruit a day, and it's at breakfast. And I don't have to pick the small apples. I get to pick the biggest freaking apple I can find. And I go to any length, guys, to find those big apples, believe me. And I buy them by the three dozens. So there's nothing that I would like to change about my abstinence today. My abstinence is perfect. It is the anchor for my life. If I did not have my abstinence, I would not have my life. And I have a very, Van knows, a very full and amazing life today. I have tremendous amount of love in my life today, much different from when I lived in my van and no one even knew who I was. I have people in my life who care about me. I have two stepchildren and two children of my own. I have a husband who absolutely adores me and I adore him. The only thing, if I could change anything, would be this. If I could just wave a magic wand and somehow give, if there's anyone struggling in here, give that person what I have, I would do it. And that's the only thing in my abstinence that I'm not satisfied with and that I never will be. Until the job is done. And there's a lot of people suffering in and out of these rooms. Thank you for letting me share.
Our next speaker is Helen. And Helen is going to speak for 15 minutes and also tell us about her weight loss and her abstinence.
Hi, I'm Helen, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Helen. And,
okay, can you hear me? I'm tall, so sometimes these things, okay. And thank you, Dan, for asking me to come and speak today. And to qualify, I have been, well, Monday, God willing, if I'm still absent, I'll be maintaining a 100-pound weight loss for 13 years. And so... So I'm very grateful, very, very grateful today. And let's see, I will qualify a little bit about what it was like. And what it was like is that I have been a compulsive overeater from my earliest memory. I've been a full-on sugar addict from my earliest memory. And my earliest memory was kindergarten. And so, and I remember the obsession with the... Sorry, Van said I have to pass my pictures around. Yes. So, okay, Van, here you go. Anyway, so yes, the obsession with the sugar and I grew up in the 50s when the mother, you know, they sent you to kindergarten with a nickel and each different mother brought the treat every day. And I remember being obsessed with the treat at 5 years old, 4 years old in kindergarten, you know. And it ruined my day when one of the mothers brought, you know, those snowballs because I hated coconut. And, you know, and that wrecked my day at 5 years old in kindergarten. And I can still picture that in my mind. And most of my memories from childhood are things revolving around food. Two things, the obsession with sugar and fear, are the two things that I remember the most from my childhood. And, I've just always been a compulsive overeater. I'd eat so much sugar until I got physically ill. And I'm not bulimic, you know, I never did that intentionally. It was just, I couldn't stop. I couldn't eat one cookie. I couldn't eat one of anything that had sugar in it. And I didn't want to eat regular food. And there was always the battle with my parents trying to get me to eat real food, and I just wanted, it was all about the sugar. So as I said, it just progressed. By the time I was a teenager, same thing. But I was a thin teenager, and I'm not sure why. Maybe I was growing really fast, and I think my parents still had control a lot about, you know, the food that I put in my mouth. But among my friends, I was notorious for how much food I ate, you know, and I was very skinny. But I knew the day was coming when it was going to catch up with me, you know, and I wasn't going to be thin anymore. And I knew I wasn't going to be able to ever stop eating the way I ate, just shoving it down my throat. And I'd look around at the, you know, I just felt like a freak. I felt very uncomfortable in my own skin. And as a young girl, as a teenager in junior high and high school, and I'd look at the girls that you could tell were comfortable in their own skin, and they could get up in front of the school and talk, and I would just look at them and think, how did they get that way, and how did I get how I am? Because there was just something wrong with me, and the only way I could get through life was to eat and shove food down my throat. I'm also a recovering alcoholic, so I started drinking at 14, too, just to, you know, to make me more comfortable, and just trying to get comfortable in my own skin. So my solution from my earliest memories, as I said, is the food, and that is the only way I know how to live my life without this program, is shoving food down my throat. So, you know, I started going on one diet after another. You know, I heard a great speaker this morning, and she's around my age, and she talked about getting abstinent at 19, and I got married at 19. That was like my solution, you know. Another thing I tried, and I told Stan, I wish I'd gotten abstinent at 19 instead of getting married at 19. Would have turned out much better. But anyway, so it was, you know, around 19 I started the diet, you know, and I think it was that pregnant women urine shots diet, and, you know, so that was the first one, and I went on that diet and gained all my weight back, you know, immediately, plus 10 pounds. So that cycle went on and on and on. I first heard about Overeaters Anonymous in the 70s, and I went to my first meeting around 1980, and I got a sponsor, and I abstained from sugar for 2 years, and that was a miracle. I'd never been able to do that before, and so I abstained from the sugar, and I stayed the same weight for 2 years, which had never happened either in my whole adult life. I'd never maintained a weight for more than, I don't know, a week maybe. I was always either going up or going down. And so I started eating again, of course, because I never worked the program. I had never worked the program with the sponsor that I had. And my solution, like I said, if I don't have any other solution, if I don't have this program, my solution to life is that I have to shove food down my throat, or I can't live, you know, that's it for me. And so I started binging again, and I gave up on going on the diets, because even thinking about going on a diet, I'd have to binge, because it was too overwhelming, the thought of not being able to eat how I ate. My solution for life was going to be taken away from me. So I left OA, like I said, and was out there again. And I tried between around 1982 and 1997, when I got abstinent this last time, I tried many times to get abstinent again. I'd come periodically to various OA meetings, and I couldn't get abstinent. I wanted to be abstinent, I really wanted to be abstinent, and I couldn't do it. And so I, that continued. Finally, around 1995 or 94, I moved to Long Beach, and I was going through a divorce, and I didn't have a job, and my life was completely unmanageable. I was 100 pounds overweight. I didn't want to leave my house because I was a mess. You know, I could barely get myself together. And I wouldn't buy new clothes because, you know, it was just a mess because I didn't want to have to buy those size, 26 or clothes that I had to wear. So I'd wear, like, stained clothes. It was a mess. So finally, and still it took 3 years of living that way. I found out when I moved to Long Beach where the Overeaters Anonymous meeting was, and it took me a while to go. I finally went. Every once in a while I'd ask somebody to be my sponsor who I knew wasn't going to make me do anything, who I knew I was going to, and we all know, you know, how to do that. And I didn't want to ask somebody who was going to make me be abstinent. So finally, and this was just the grace of God, and if I could tell somebody how to not eat compulsively, I wish I had that. No, you know, I wish I could tell you how. For me, it was the grace of God. I was struck abstinent. I was struck willing on January 18th, 1997. I saw one woman in this meeting that I went to who was losing weight. There was one woman losing weight. And finally, I just got the willingness to go and ask this woman to sponsor me. And she said to me, well, she said, okay, she said, what's your food plan? And I had no idea. I was scared to death because, you know, I didn't know. I had no idea what I was going to eat. And she told me what she ate. And the grace of God, I ate what she ate. She told me her food plan. I followed her food plan. And she told me to call her at the same time every day. And I thought, oh, sure. Forget the food plan. I thought calling somebody at the same time every day, that was going to be the big miracle. You know what I mean? And I did it. And I called my food into my sponsor for the first 7 years of my abstinence. And I have a defined food plan, which for me, and I'm just like you said, I'm just sharing with you my experience. This is my experience, and my experience is that for me, I have to have a defined food plan. Otherwise, I am insane, and I'm wondering, am I abstinent? Am I not abstinent? And so I got great freedom in having a defined food plan. And so one day at a time, you know, I've been abstaining. My food plan remains pretty much the same. I have become a vegetarian, things like that. Well, not really, because I eat fish once in a while, but whatever that's called, you know. Somebody who fish once in a while and doesn't eat meat. But and I haven't eaten sugar. And, you know, one of the things was, has the obsession been removed? And I'm here to tell you it has been removed. For me, a full-on, low-bottom sugar addict. And I told my sponsor, I remember, I said, well, what happens when my daughter gets married and I'm not going to be able to have cake at her wedding? And you know what? My daughter got married and I didn't have cake, and it was so fine with me that I didn't have cake. And the obsession has been removed. I haven't had a cookie, a piece of cake, anything that I used to binge on and live on and thought that I couldn't live without eating all this time. You know, if it hadn't been removed, I wouldn't be standing here today, you know, with 12 years of abstinence, because I wouldn't have been able to not eat it. I mean, I wouldn't be able to white knuckle it for this amount of time. And it's a gift. It's such an incredible gift. I'm so grateful. You know, I look at that stuff. I'm not saying some days, because for me, you know, I still think of things like carbs as comfort. And some days I think, gosh, you know, I want that comfort to take the edge off. But I have, like I said, I have not, the obsession for that stuff has been removed. And, you know, I work with two compulsive overeaters. I'm just in a really grateful place because two full-on compulsive overeaters who are each at least 150 pounds overweight. And on Friday, one of them was sharing with me how she has to take, and she's about my age, has to take a Vicodin every day to be able to get out of bed in the morning without pain. She has to wait for that Vicodin to kick in. And I just looked at her and I thought, that's me. That's me without this program. Because when I came here and I was 100 pounds overweight, my feet hurt before I got out of bed in the morning. They felt like they were going to split open. And you know, today I get out of bed and I don't have any pain. And it just makes me grateful. And I look at her and I think, why me? Because I brought this person to this program before and given them a copy of the big book. And, you know, and this person doesn't want it. And so I'm just so grateful. I don't know why me and why not someone else. But I'm just grateful because, you know what, this is a priceless gift that I have, that I've just been given through the grace of God. And so, yeah, so for me, it's just, you know, and it's just enlarging my spiritual life, like it says, you know. I was just reading this the other day, and I love this. It says, faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. If an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again, and if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith without works would be dead. With that, with us, it is like that. So, you know, and they say, when I want to eat, the solution is that working with a newcomer is the solution. It says here, I'm talking with the man there. I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It is a design for living that works in rough going. So the solution to me when I do, you know, when I was new and I wanted to eat was, you know, I had to go and be of service and go to meetings and work with others. And that's the solution. And like I said, the only thing I did right was that I kept coming back throughout the years trying to get abstinent. But if I'm not sitting in these rooms, then, you know, I have no choice or no opportunity to get abstinent. So if you're struggling, just keep coming back. Thanks.
Help me welcome our final panelist, Al, who will share for 15 minutes on the topic. And Al is going to qualify with weight loss and abstinence.
Thank you, Jen, for asking me. My name is Al. I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm going to talk louder. Is that better?
A little too humble.
Too humble? Okay. I told her I was going to try to be humble. I need to tell you that I'm different. I'm weird. You need to know that. And I don't expect any of you to do what I did. I came into Overeaters Anonymous in 1968. Are you okay? I came into Overeaters Anonymous in 1968. I came in the Belinda group, and I came in weighing about 235, I quit weighing myself at 235 pounds. What had happened is I was sober. I got sober in AA in 1963, and then I quit smoking, and I went straight from cigarettes to Winchell's Donuts. You know what I mean? And And I used food to handle my emotions. You know, like I remember I would make a pass at my wife. I'd ask her, like, you know, like, can we have a little tonight? And she'd say, again? And I'd say, again? I mean, this is only the second time this month. And so I would get up and I would go over and I would go to the refrigerator. And I'm half Mexican, so I would make bean sandwiches, make a couple of bean sandwiches and have a large glass of milk and turn it over to God. You ever realize that easy it is over to turn over to God on a full stomach? You know, really. And so, I mean, that was, I mean, I got people tease me. I worked in a factory, in sewing factories, and people would tease me about my weight, and it just got to be a drag, you know what I mean? And besides that, you know, you'd have to, I couldn't bend over and tie my shoes, but I figured I was okay because I was still wearing size 36 elastic waist pants, you know what I mean? It's amazing I didn't get gangrene of the leg, you know what I mean? Because I felt as long as I was wearing 36, I was okay. But I didn't realize that my attitude was like, you know, my attitude about life was, I'll make friends with this guy and I'll be nice to him so he'll like me. I had to be nice to life so that people in life would like me. Because I felt that I really wasn't worthy. I felt that, you know, I felt I was less than. I felt that, you know, that my dad told me, whatever you do, don't hang around with Mexicans. And my dad was Mexican. You know what I mean? And so I thought I was unworthy because of that. I was molested when I was 7 years old by my uncle, and I always thought I was unworthy because of that. So, a lot of people, you know, like for me to say that I have a real issue, that my issue is battling food. My issue isn't battling food, because what I used food for was relief. I use it for relief. What I use it for relief from my emotions. See? And what caused my emotions? What caused my emotions to be out of hand is what I thought. My thinking is what caused that. Like in the 12, and you know, I may be contrary to a lot of things that you're going to hear in OA. That's why I tell you, don't listen to me. You know what I mean? Because the battle isn't with food. The battle isn't with food for me. You know, because I use food to give me relief, because I couldn't stand the way I felt. The battle was for me. The issue was for me. My issue for me was not so much to put myself on the diet. My issue for me was to put myself on a mental diet. Because what I thought is what caused me suffering. As long as I was suffering, there's not enough food in the world for me. You know, I would whip in front of, my favorite thing was to whip in front of Ralph's, get oatmeal cookies, and then get a can of, you know, that frosting that they use for carrot cake. And just sit there and butter it and eat it. Butter it and eat it, butter and eat it, you know. Eat that, or stuff down bean sandwiches, you know, or just eat. I would just eat till my feelings were gone. See, it isn't like I was eating compulsively or whatever. I was eating till my feelings were gone. I couldn't stand the way I felt. That's why I ate. So what I needed to do was, I checked into OA. And I remember the first meeting I went to was the Valinda group in Hacienda Heights. There was about 9 women there and 1 guy. And the meeting was over. I went and talked to this guy, and the guy, he was too busy talking to the women to talk to me. But I heard him mention food plan and stuff like that. So I went over, got a meeting list and food plan. And on the meeting list was, they used to put the secretary of the meeting had her name on there with a phone number. So I called this gal up and she asked me, I thought it was my first meeting. She asked me, was I abstaining? I said, well, what do you mean abstaining? What do you mean? She says, well, you know, you can't talk at the meeting until you had calling abstinence for 3 weeks. You know, you can laugh at that. You can think it's funny. You can really think it's funny. But let me tell you something. If you want to find out what's eating you, abstain. It'll come right up. It'll come right up. You know. Then if you got the guts, you'll handle it. And if you don't I take a look at it. If I don't handle it in this life, I'm going to have to handle it in the next one. If it's all the same to you, I want to handle it this one because I don't want to go through life living a counterfeit life, living a pretending person. I don't want to have to do that. If I have to say anything really made me real, it was Overeaters Anonymous because I was confronted with issues and I was sober at that particular time figure, 5 years. I was confronted with the issues that I had never, that would never have come up if I hadn't have abstained. And my problem when I first came on the program wasn't abstaining. My problem was reading. Really. They had the food plan. I'd be talking to her. I forget my gal's name. And I never saw her for about 4 weeks until after I was on the program. So I was calling. My problem was, can I have ketchup? She says, is it on the food plan? I read that. No, it's not on the food plan. She said, then you can't have it. And I say, well, can I have, then I call and say, can I have refried beans? She said, is it on the food plan? Well, no, if it's not on the food plan, you can't have it. And so it went on like that for about 3 weeks. And after about three, 4 weeks, what happened is I got to have anxiety attacks. And how you handle anxiety attacks is you just learn how to surf them. You just say, oh, is this what an anxiety attack feels like? You know what I mean? And your heart's going to be going, that's what it feels like. And so you just, that's what happens. But see, when all of this happens, thoughts come up. Things came up for me. And I learned how to handle it, But what Overeaters Anonymous really helped me is I was sober, I was on OA like for 4 years when I was really caught up in drama, like, all, you know, like my life was falling apart. And you know how you can spot drama, don't you? It's not happening. It's in your imagination, you know. But I didn't know that. I thought it was real. If I thought that was real. And what happens is I had to learn how to meditate. And so I went to see this meditation guy, Shinzen Young, and he taught me how to meditate. And I started meditating, for about 3 years, I did meditation retreats for Overeaters Anonymous. They fly me around different cities, and what it really did, it made me realize this. And this might be contrary to what you think, but it's okay. I don't care. You know, God loves me. She totally loves me. And I sponsored Doris. I don't know if anybody knows Doris. I sponsored Doris until she died. And I always used to tell her, you know, Doris, you know, God created us good. She created us good. We're good now. We are good. And we always will be good, you know. And she painted, and she made me a little picture with that on there and gave it to me. But that's it. See, God, think that God doesn't like, you know, that God cares what I weigh. God doesn't care what I weigh. God totally loves me. Totally loves me. It's up to me. It's up to me to do something that's good for me. You know, if I abstain and I go through the pain if I abstain and I go through the pain of my thinking that has caused my life to suffer, if I go through the pain of the why am I not free? Why do I feel that I'm not free? The reason I feel I'm not free is because the subtle agreements in my life that I've made myself a prisoner to by those agreements. They came up when I abstained. And what happened is I was able to look at them and observe them. I was able to look at them and observe them and say, I don't want to do that anymore. Well, I do want to do this anymore. You know, God just totally, she wants me to be happy. But for me to be, God can't, and I can't get on my knees and ask God for me to be happy if I don't think thoughts that's going to create the condition called happiness. You understand? You know, I cannot, my finger's wet. Why? Because I put it in water. You follow me? Happiness is the same way. If I want to be happy, I have to create the condition of happiness. And creating the condition of happiness, I have to think thoughts that create me happy, that cause me to be happy. One book that's a really good book to read is a book called Four Agreements. And I think it's really good for compulsive overeaters. Because what happens is we've designed a way of life, of living, where we hate ourselves, where we think we're unworthy. And then what we do is we create stories to support that. Create a whole movie to support that. And we live that story. And you know what? It's only a story. It's not real. Because the real thing is, all there really is, and I'm going to tell you this, all there really is right here, right now, right here, right here, right here. Here we are again. Right here. This is that. Right here. There's nowhere else. You're okay right now, right? And here's another now. We're okay right now. And here's another now. We're okay right now. We go through life being okay. And all we have to do is just kind of be aware of that. Santa, I want to thank you so much. And I want to thank you people over here, Anonymous, because you did give me freedom. You gave me a way to think. And you gave me a life. And I just want to tell you, I love you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Al. Now our panel will do a Q&A with the Ask It Basket. So I guess I just pull it out. What does it mean to be a restrictor? Anybody?
What's that?
What does it mean to be a restrictor?
Oh, Lord.
What's the question?
What does it mean to be a restrictor?
You know
that one?
Anyone?
Helen, why don't you take care of that one?
She didn't know.
Yes. You know what? I don't know what that means. Is there anybody in the room that knows what that means? If somebody could tell us what that means.
What does it mean to be a restrictor?
A restrictor. Okay, I guess the next one. Anorexia? Okay, got it. I have no experience.
All right, let's move on. Should we move on or do you want to talk about it? Okay. What's this? Wow, this is long. Okay. What would you tell someone who struggles with giving up foods as a way of treating themselves? What would you tell someone who struggles with giving up foods as a way of treating themselves? Right. Anybody? Okay, good.
The question is, what would you tell someone who's struggling with giving up food as a way of treating himself? Well, I tell him to keep eating. I tell him, then he'll stop when he's, because what he's, see, the reason he's eating is because his thinking is screwed up. You follow me? His thinking is screwed up and I mean, I have to add, I mean, if somehow or other we got to make that connection that my compulsive eating, when I feel like eating compulsively, I've got a thinking problem. What am I thinking now that causes me to feel bad about myself? That's my answer.
Good answer.
Good answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. Right. Ah, I like this one. How do I know? Wait. No, no, thank you. Maybe during the open sharing time you could talk about it. How do I know if I should eliminate a certain food from my abstinence plan? Okay.
Well, this is just my experience with sponsees. I don't eat sugar, so I have sponsees sometimes, and they think, well, I'm not sure if I have a problem with sugar. And so I tell them, well, if it's not a problem, then it's not a problem to give it up. So that's just my experience.
Hi, everyone. I do things a little bit different, than a lot of people, and I do what my sponsor does. And my sponsor told me something when I first started working with her that literally changed my life. She said, and she told me to go to AA meetings to supplement my meetings for food. And I said, but I'm not an alcoholic. She said, you are an alcoholic. You're an alcoholic with food. And food, certain types of food, are alcohol, but in its solid form. So we abstain from any food that can be made into alcohol. She said, I'm a walking distillery. I said, oh. So anything that can be made into alcohol, sugars, grains, starches, carbohydrates, potatoes, they make vodka, right? So anything that can be made into alcohol, I don't consume. Because if I consume those substances, I'm like a walking distillery, and those substances create alcohol in my body. And now, even if I've had one tiny little taste of something, the phenomenon of craving, which talks about in the big book, is set off. And now I have no choice. I must binge. And it might not be today, but eventually I will be binging if that food is in my body. So for 16, almost 17 years, I have abstained completely from anything that can be converted into alcohol. What do I have left to eat, you think? Not a heck of a lot, no. I have amazing, beautiful food. I eat huge meals, huge meals. I just abstain from those substances. I'm not hungry between my meals. I've had two babies, natural childbirth with no drugs, and they were the two best days of my life. I've gotten married. My father-in-law died, and I remained abstinent, and I remain to this day. I firmly believe that I have a physical allergy to sugars, grains, starches, and carbohydrates. And once those things are eliminated from my diet, that phenomenon of craving, for me, disappeared. If I had craving, I would not be here today because I would not be able to maintain almost 17 years of it. I cannot fight the craving. I cannot fight it. So I eliminate the foods that create it, and I do not experience the craving. I hope that's of help to somebody. Thank you.
Thanks, Angela. Okay, let's see. This person wants to know from each of the panelists what their food plan is. Does anybody want to share their food plan? Alan?
Just go down and start with her.
Okay.
Yeah, my food plan is for breakfast I have protein and fruit, and then I do have an ounce of a protein mid-morning, and then for lunch I have protein again, vegetables, and sometimes I have a grain, and then for lunch, at mid-afternoon again, an ounce of protein, and then same for dinner, I have protein, vegetables, and that's my food plan.
Thank you.
We must have the same sponsor. For breakfast, I have protein and a fruit. For lunch, protein, cooked veg, raw veg, biggest and the best. For lunch, I have protein, cooked veg, raw veg, 3 tablespoons of fat, not the little teaspoons, the big tablespoons. Lunch, I get 1 tablespoon of fat. I go through bottles and bottles and bottles of olive oil, and I think I need it. I love it. And I love my food. Every day is Christmas, and that's my food plan.